know, a lot of people are saying, oh, everyone's worn out, worn out, worn out. We used to have a 120-day session here.
Lawmakers debate moving the session to Anchorage, while Governor Walker says stay in Juneau. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, April 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, documenting bear behavior in Anchorage from their point of view.
They're not here to visit us. They could give a hooey about us. They're here for the garbage, the fish, the berries, the gull eggs, the equisetum, the grasses, the dandelions.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Earn a Master of Public Administration from the University of Alaska Southeast online on your schedule while having the structure of the classroom and the accessibility of e-learning. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Governor Bill Walker has denied a request from legislative leadership to relocate the special session to a different venue. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
For days, the executive and legislative branches have been stuck on education funding, Medicaid, and the fundamental responsibility of paying for government. Now, they are disagreeing on where they want to disagree.
So you want to do Medicaid and Aaron's Law in Anchorage, that's fine, but do not leave Juneau without a fully funded budget.
In a letter to legislative leadership and then in a press conference with reporters, Governor Bill Walker said he would not agree to give lawmakers a two-week recess followed by a change of venue. Legislative leaders like Senate President Kevin Meyer have been pushing for a relocation since the special session gaveled in yesterday. The Anchorage Republican says there are logistical challenges to remaining in Juneau.
The building's under major construction, the staff is gone, our files are gone, our computers are gone, and we all have dirty clothes.
Meyer says most of his suits were put on the ferry 10 days ago. Officeware questions aside, Meyer says his caucus would like a cooling period because of the stalemate on a number of policy questions. He adds that requiring the legislature to take up the budget again may backfire for the governor, who restored some money for education and public employee contracts on Tuesday.
Okay, you know, we'll do the budget, but, you know, the results may not be any different. And if anything, you know, my guys, our caucus, we realize that we got to get our spending in order first. So you actually might see more reductions. We're in no mood to add.
But some Democrats, like House Minority Leader Chris Tuck, are supportive of the governor's decision. He says a recess at this time is inappropriate.
You know, I have a brand new baby I only spent a few hours with. If anybody wants to go home and be with their newborn, it's me. I'm not interested in taking a vacation. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, everyone's worn out, worn out, worn out. We used to have a 120-day session here.
No matter where the special session is held, a compromise seems elusive. In Juneau, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
With less than a week until Anchorage voters head to the polls to select a new mayor in a runoff election, hundreds of thousands of dollars are pouring into the race. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports one candidate has an overwhelming lead in terms of donors and funds, but with no polling data released by either campaign, the results are difficult to predict.
Ethan Berkowitz leads Amy Domboski by every fundraising measure. This week's campaign filings show that both candidates have paid outside groups to collect polling data, but neither is saying what it's turned up. What is clear is that the Berkowitz campaign raised more than twice the Domboski campaign in the last month, and that money came from a broader donor role. Domboski's campaign collected donations from just over 400 individuals. Berkowitz got donations from more than 1,400. Many of those are public employees donating individually. However, a political action group called Berkowitz for a Better Anchorage, made up of unions representing the fire and police departments, state employees, and teachers, has thrown more than $100,000 into the race. With just a few days left before Tuesday's runoff, the Domboski campaign has about a quarter of the cash on hand that the Berkowitz campaign reports. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The EPA is working on a Clean Air Act regulation that would require Alaska to lower the amount of greenhouse gases emitted from power plants by 26%. But EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy says her agency will seriously consider exempting the state entirely. The EPA aims to give states a lot of latitude in deciding how to achieve their targets. Senator Lisa Murkowski, though, said at a hearing in Washington today that no amount of flexibility will make the rule workable in Alaska. Alaska's limited grid is unconnected to any other states, so some solutions lower 48 states might employ aren't available. McCarthy told the senator she understands that.
We find ourselves often talking about the uniqueness of Alaska. Mm-hmm. This is another instance in which that is again the case because they are not interconnected in a
so
way that other states are.
So are you considering this as an exemption, considering the state's request for a full exemption?
We actually have in the rule itself solicited that comment.
In Alaska, the rule applies to 5 power plants on the Rail Belt grid. Critics say it would drive up rates in Fairbanks, which depends in part on a coal plant. But energy efficiency advocates argue Alaska could substantially cut emissions with incentives to lower consumer demand and improve the infrastructure of the grid. Senator Murkowski also pressed the EPA boss on a wetlands rule the agency is preparing. It's known as Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS. It's highly controversial, with some opponents saying it will regulate small ditches and puddles. Alaska has nearly 2/3 of the nation's wetlands, and Murkowski says the rule has all kinds of people worried, from home builders to miners and energy companies.
They are scared to death about what we may see with application of this rule. And you keep using the word clarification, or this is just to clarify. But again, I'm hearing from too many different sectors saying this is not clarification. This is a limitation on our ability to not only move but to breathe.
McCarthy stuck to her claim that the rule is not an expansion of the Clean Water Act, just a clarification to comply with Supreme Court rulings. The U.S. House is expected to vote soon on a bill to block the WOTUS rule, and similar bills are pending in the Senate. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the federal agents who keep alcohol out of the mail in the YK Delta.
We develop intelligence to find out who's doing this because a lot of these communities are so small that people know what's going on in town.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
It's been 4 decades since Bethel had a liquor store, and for now that status will continue. The Bethel City Council voted yesterday to protest 2 liquor store license applications from the Bethel Native Corporations, Bethel Spirits, and the Alaska Commercial Company. Council members cited the loud public outcry against having easier access to alcohol, as well as possible violations of rules against being too close to churches and schools. When the debate entered the weeds, Councilmember Chuck Herman added a line to the resolution.
I just want to make it very clear that our protest stands based upon us as a community being opposed to it and not because of technical violations.
The vote was 4-3. The state's Alcoholic Beverage Control Board is required to honor protests from governing bodies unless they are found to be arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. Bethel Native Corporation President and CEO Anna Hoffman insisted the proposed store is legally situated and argued that what Bethel has now is not working.
The presence of illegal sales is undeniable, and not a cent of those sales is taxed. We have quite possibly created the most unhealthy environment imaginable. Unlimited importation and no mechanism for legal sales. Allowing for the issuance of a liquor license enhances control and regulation over the current system of chaos.
In an October non-binding advisory vote, Bethel citizens will weigh in on whether they support several categories of liquor licenses. In the same election, they can approve a new 12% alcohol sales tax. A small team of federal law enforcement agents with the United States Postal Inspection Service is working to keep alcohol out of the mail in one of the oldest law enforcement agencies in the country. A group with a unique mission chases after each suspicious package. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more in the third and final installment profiling efforts to stem the flow of illegal alcohol to local option communities in the YK Delta.
Transporting alcohol by boat, truck, or snow machine is the choice of many bootleggers trying to import alcohol into dry villages. But for people who live in more distant communities or in times when river conditions make travel impossible, the United States Postal Service can be a tempting way to ship illegal cargo directly to the post office box of the recipient. But it doesn't always go as planned.
Sometimes it's really obvious when something's, for instance, leaking whiskey or vodka, and you can smell it a mile away, so those are the easy ones to find.
Anchorage-based postal inspector Alan Damron spends his waking hours trying to stop bottles from reaching places where they'll do harm. It's completely illegal to send alcohol through the U.S. mail. Records of alcohol seizures over the past 4 years show dozens of shipments per year to local option communities intercepted by the Anchorage team, and more are discovered by troopers in regional hubs. While a few broken microbrews or bottles of wine make the list, the vast majority sent to local option communities are vodka and whiskey. Many are just a few bottles, but shipments as large as 36 bottles of vodka or 24 bottles of rich and rare whiskey are intercepted. Depending on the final destination, that can be worth thousands of dollars on the black market. Veteran Inspector Ron Zielinski is an interim supervisor in Anchorage and spent 8 years working the state's alcohol cases. He says people try with varying success to hide liquor.
You know, burp the bottles. That means the plastic bottles, they have air in them. They'll break the seal, release the air, and close them back up and duct tape them. That's been going on 15 years ago, still going today. Hiding in any type of thing, dog food, switching out alcohol into apple juice bottles. It looks like apple juice.
Damron says their success relies more on people than it does fancy technology or dogs that are used in drug enforcement.
But with alcohol, it's different. So I would say the main way that we get into these packages is talking to people and just, you know, getting their side of the story. And it's usually talking to the people the packages are going to.
The inspectors have eyes and ears on the ground with local contacts who give them tips. Damron spent time on the Kuskokwim Ice Road this winter and also travels to bush communities.
We develop intelligence to find out who's doing this because a lot of these communities are so small that people know what's going on in town.
And as U.S. Mail is a highly protected federal service, they've trained and authorized deputized troopers in a unique program to do postal sorts and build cases, what they call force multipliers. For Damron, the connection between public safety and the alcohol and drugs he searches for is clear.
When we find a bottle of alcohol, that could be one less rape, one less assault, one less, person abusing a child. And so it's a huge motivation for me because I'm from here. I was born and raised in Alaska, and my whole life I've heard about the effects alcohol has on these communities.
Although it's a federal misdemeanor to ship alcohol, the inspector's cases are most often prosecuted at the state level, where bootleggers can face felony-level charges. Damron doesn't know how many gallons elude inspectors and travel hundreds of miles to illegally arrive in mailboxes. He says every bottle is worth the effort.
That's part of law enforcement. You do the best you can do. You go to work every day and try to do your duties to the best of your abilities. But there's definitely going to be stuff we don't find. But, I mean, we're not going to give up. We're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep finding as much as we can. And we're going to work with the state to hold people accountable for what they're doing.
And as millions of parcels travel across the country, it's going to happen package by package. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Most of us have never lived without running water at home. Today, we'll hear about people who are getting used to a lack of indoor plumbing and others who would rather have running water. In the second segment of the series Kick the Bucket, we'll also hear some of the reasons Alaska hasn't made modern plumbing a simple fact of life for all Alaskans. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Dan Winkleman, the president of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, or YKHC, recently got a phone call from his mother-in-law in Queethluck.
And she goes, "Guess what?" And I was like, "What?" And she said, "I just finished doing the dishes in my sink with the water from the faucet. And I wanted to let you know how exciting that was." And she was just giddy, you know, with excitement.
What's so exciting about washing dishes? Queethluck never had running water before. It wasn't easy and it wasn't cheap. A water treatment plant, water tank, and sewage lagoon cost $41 million. That's a lot of money, but this is rural Alaska. Weather can wreak havoc with schedules. Getting anything here is expensive, especially heavy equipment, and piped water and sewer means digging trenches for pipes and pumps, plus installing plumbing in individual homes. But Queethluck's system is costly even for rural Alaska, where piped water and sewer in some communities cost in the $3 to $5 million range. YKHC remote maintenance worker Bob White says the Queethluck treatment plant, which cost $4.2 million, has sophisticated features to reduce maintenance and operations, such as computerized controls and sensors that will send out alerts if something isn't working as it should. And to avoid the expense of large underground sewage pipes, each home is getting a grinder pump that will move sewage through narrow 2-inch pipes.
They're expensive, and they're heavy. This one's brand new.
And it's heavy duty.
Their original design broke. Part of the problem, it wouldn't take the harsh conditions. The pump manufacturer actually started making an Arctic version. And so this is their Arctic version.
50 miles up the Kuskokwim River, Tuntutuliak, population 400, doesn't have running water and gets by on what's called a flush haul system. Waste from flush toilets goes into a holding tank, then gets hauled away. People have to haul water home. Brian Lefferts, director of YKHC's Office of Environmental Health and Engineering, says there's a public health cost to that.
We find that people drastically conserve the water, and then they don't realize the health benefits that come with having pipe running water and sewer service.
Leffert says the decision on which communities get funding for water and sewer projects comes out of a detailed evaluation.
All the water and sewer, what we call needs in the state, get entered into a database. It's called the Sanitation Deficiency System. We have estimated project costs, number of homes they'd serve, looking at health impact, capital cost, the current level of service, and then the level of service they'd have after the project.
Other criteria include how well the community is doing, managing what it has, collecting fees, for instance, and getting employees trained and certified. A 1994 report by the Federal Office of Technology Assessment recommended an annual budget of $120 million for rural sanitation in Alaska. Federal and state funding combined never reached that level, and now officials say it will take $900 million to catch up. But federal funding has dropped by 64% in the past 10 years. The gap between what's needed and what's available is getting wider. And the lack of money right now for maintenance and operations is damaging existing systems. We'll find out more about that next time. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Alaska Pacific University emphasizes teaching and research that engages the region's social, cultural, environmental, and geopolitical issues. The university's early honors program attracts academically advanced high school students who complete their senior year credits while also earning college credits as full-time APU students. This message sponsored by APU.
three Anchorage men are under arrest and charged with cruelty to animals, wanton waste, and tampering with evidence in a bizarre moose killing in a city park. 25-year-old Jonathan Candelario, 28-year-old James Galloway, and Nick Johnson, 33, were seen by witnesses attacking a young moose with a knife last evening. Witnesses called police, but when APD officers arrived, the animal was dead. APD spokeswoman Anita Shell says the officers located the suspects near the scene. They were wearing bloody clothes and matched witness descriptions. Castro said the witnesses who called police say the men were jumping on the animal and stabbing it with a large knife.
I have never seen anything like this in my time at the police department. It's very unusual for somebody to attack a large animal such as a moose like they did.
Witnesses told police that the moose was not aggressive, nor did it provoke the attack. The incident occurred about 7:20 p.m. last night on a public bike path south of Russian Jack Springs Park in East Anchorage. The three men are being held in the Anchorage Correctional Complex. The moose meat has been salvaged by a local charity. A new map from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game offers a bear's eye view of Anchorage. The story map draws on data and video collected from 9 bears, 6 black and 3 brown, who wore cameras on special collars in 2012 and 2013. The videos capture bears playing with lawn art, slurping up barbecue grease, and running across busy intersections. Sean Farley is the biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game who led the study. He says the cameras offered a lot of insight into the food bears eat in the city.
If a bear wants to eat garbage in Anchorage, it doesn't really matter if it's garbage pickup day. There's still enough unsecured garbage out there in backyards and open garages and whatnot that they can actually go get garbage. And there was a lot more bird seed than we realized that was available. And not always in a feeder. Somebody might take down the feeder and then forget to bring in the 50-pound bag of sunflower seeds, or they'd leave the garage door open and the seeds would be available. And then they would go for chicken food, not just the chickens, but also the food for the chickens. And then any unsecured garden. We have a wonderful segment, short one, where you watch a bear pass through an electric fence that's improperly set because the gap between the wires is too high and it was going into a garden. The other thing is that Anchorage, we all have this, know that we have a wonderful greenbelt system with great trails, and it should, we like that. We want to keep that. There are a fair number of natural foods available to the bears. And what we found is that, in fact, they're eating probably more occurrences of natural foods than garbage over the course of the summer period.
What did you learn about how bears interact with other bears?
We gained a lot of insight. We might capture a lone bear, usually a youngster, put a camera on it, and then more often than not, during the course of the summer, it would hook up with two or three other bears and pal around with them. And in one case, we had a bear, a young black bear, hook up and play with a young brown bear. And so they're a little more social than I think we give them credit for when they're young and they've been weaned by their mom. They're lonely. I'm being anthropomorphic here, I realize, but they seek out different kinds of interactions, you know. And I think part of that is a trait that does run through bears. You probably all remember some of those famous photographs of polar bears playing with sled dogs. And I do believe that there is something within the bear psyche, if you will, that they, you know, if they're not going to eat it, they maybe want to play with it.
So it was interesting to me to see the camera that was on the bear that was quite a ways up in a tree, like much higher than I would have expected for the bear to be. If people want to bear watch, maybe instead of looking around, they should be looking up?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm a biologist, and it's, of course, that was a head slapper for me. Black bears spend a lot of time in trees, and they do in Anchorage. And a short story is I just grilled a hot dog and was looking out my window, and I realized I was looking at a black bear in a tree in my yard, and I'm not way up the hillside at all. And I ran outside, and it was the collar bear, and it actually took a picture of my house.
Do you feel like you really got to know some of the bears in a way?
Well, the young ones are teenagers, and so the personalities are quite volatile and variable. But I would say overall, yes, you get a sense of it. And when you can go approach a bear in the field, if it's an animal you've handled before and it's collared and you do that a couple of times, you do get a sense of their personality because they are different. Bears are very smart animals, very intelligent, and just like people, they'll have very different personalities. And some get along just great with people and some don't, you know. And from previous work, I can tell you there are an awful lot of times that the bears might be 10 or 20 yards off in the bushes while we walk down the trail. We're a visual species. We don't see them. Therefore, there aren't any bears here. But the truth is that they're off to the side being good bears, frankly, avoiding people. You know, they're not here to visit us. They could give a hooey about us. They're here for the garbage, the fish, the berries, the gall eggs, the equisetum, the grasses, the dandelions.
Does this data that you've been collecting shed any light on the problem and maybe how to address it of keeping bears from eating garbage in Anchorage?
Well, I think right off the bat, the first thing is that because we do have an awful lot of unsecured garbage, if we can really change that. And I fully recognize that not everyone has a garage that they can put the garbage into, and nobody wants to put their garbage in a can in the living room until garbage pickup day. But we really need a stronger effort to get bear-resistant containers that people can use. And that'll make a big difference because we're always going to have bears in Anchorage. Anchorage is a big city, but we're in the middle of wilderness. And we have, you know, one of the nation's largest state parks right behind us, and it's producing black bears constantly, even though we still have hunts up there. And unless the public decide we're going to shoot every bear we see, we're going to have bears coming through town. And the smart bears don't get into trouble. They don't get into garbage. But every now and then you get one that does. And if we can keep that from happening, we'll see far fewer bears, but they'll still be around. I can guarantee it.
Sean Farley is a biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Farley also recommends electric wire around chicken coops and cleaning the grease traps on barbecues. You can see a map and videos at our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, you can find us online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Jacqueline Estes and Ellen Locke here in Anchorage, and Ben Matheson in Bethel. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, and Liz Ruskin from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you. The University of Alaska Southeast School of Management offers online college degrees for the unconventional student or working professional who wants learning on their schedule and timeline. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.